Did you hear what happened in New York? Unbelievable.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, it's a grievous day. It's a sad day. It's a day to reflect and to mourn over what happened in the state of New York. A radical abortion law passed. It's being celebrated. I'm reading headlines on various news outlets, New York updates. It's archaic abortion law. It's already in many ways the nation's abortion capital. But now when one tragic stepfather. This is Michael Brown. Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire. I'd rather talk about other things, but imagine if we lived in the days of slavery and there was a real battle to free the slaves and liberate the slaves and give dignity to the slaves, and instead one of our states passed new legislation to up the slave trade and to lose even more slaves as they're being transported across the Atlantic because the pace would pick up brutally, and now more lives are going to be destroyed and lost. Is that the kind of thing, as followers of Jesus, we just ignore? This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. And we live, friends, today in a culture that celebrates death, not just abortion. Abortion and many other things have made us into a culture of death. If you have your own abortion-related story, we've opened the phones in this way over the months, and some of the most moving, poignant calls we've ever received have been from those who've had abortions in the past or paid for a girlfriend to have an abortion or participated somehow in an abortion. The world is saying, shout your abortion! And the same Shout Your Abortion movement, they've got a book for little children, for kids, Shout Your Abortion. And you just talk about these things and so on. And I got the Shout Your Abortion book, the adult version, and reading it and people telling their stories and funny stories, abortion story. Ah, ha, ha. This is no laughing matter. This is no laughing matter. If you differ with me, if you are positive on what New York did, you're celebrating this, you think this is wonderful. President Trump, he's trying to overturn Roe v. Wade. You know, these conservatives in the Supreme Court. This is an attack on women's rights. This is an attack on health. This is an attack on the ability of women to determine their own lives. Well, if you feel that way, give me a call. Go ahead, 866-34-TRUTH. We'll have an honest, candid conversation. 866-348 is the, well, stop myself in midstream. But call us, 866-348-7884, the number to call. And if you've had a negative experience with abortion and you think your negative experience could help someone else, maybe someone listening, maybe someone watching that's contemplating abortion, and your negative experience, the pain you've lived with, could help them, then by all means, give us a call, 866-34-TRUTH. So the New York law, in short, says that you can abort your baby up until the day of delivery if the mother's health is allegedly threatened. What does that mean? Maybe she'll be depressed? Maybe she'll have a mental health breakdown? Is that what it means? Does it mean life-threatening physically? What if it's not life-threatening? These are the types of massive loopholes that you could drive a tractor trailer through up until the day of delivery. And how, pray tell, do you abort a healthy baby in the womb that's a day or two short of 9 months old? What do you do? If you've got little ones around now, if you've got folks that are going to not want to hear this, I'll give you just a couple of seconds to get them doing something else, because what I'm going to describe is pretty horrific. But if we talk about what's called partial birth abortion, or we talk about late-term abortion. This is the common practice. Are you ready? This is what's done. This is what New York has put its stamp on. And trust me, there are going to be all kinds of abortions that take place with zero, even half legitimate medical excuses. But this is what's done. The baby is turned so that she will be coming out feet first. That's very important. So listen to me. You are delivering a healthy baby that could live outside of the womb, feet first. Why? Because you can't get the head out easily, and you want the baby dead when it comes out. So what do? You stick scissors, sharp object, into the back of the skull. I'm sorry to talk about this, and I don't imagine this is going to be approved for monetization on YouTube, but that is the last and the least concern. But it is the truth. You stick sharp objects, so scissors, into the back of the skull. So the baby is still alive at this point. And then you suck the baby's brains out so the skull collapses, and then the baby can be more easily delivered. New York has just said up until the day of delivery, if there is some alleged reason for it. Let me just read one description here. This is what the bill says. Every individual becomes pregnant. Why not say woman? Why not say, oh, is that? You can't say woman now? I don't know. I'm just wondering. Because maybe a person identifies differently. Maybe it's a woman who identifies as a man, but you still get pregnant. That's odd language. But I don't know if I'm reading too much into that. Every individual who becomes pregnant has the fundamental right to choose to carry the pregnancy to term, to give birth to a child, so they have the right to do that, or to have an abortion. That is their fundamental right. Now, I've heard it said that if men got pregnant instead of women, then nobody would be talking about overturning abortion laws. All the senators, all the congressmen, all the judges, they'd all be saying, oh, yeah, we should have the right to abort because, hey, their body, their choice. They're not women. They're not imposing this on women. I understand how that could sound to someone. But if that's the case, it just means that men are evil, too. But men think evil thoughts, selfish thoughts, too. Now, look, I understand that you may have found yourself in a terribly difficult position. Maybe you were raped at 15 years old and you are in a godly home and godly family. And you think nobody could know about that. I know I was raped, but people are going to think, well, was I willing or what? But either way, I'm pregnant. And for my parents to have a pregnant teenager in the home, let's say your dad's a pastor. My parents have a pregnant teenager in the home, and now I got a baby. I can't raise a baby. I'm 15. I didn't finish high school. I can't take care of a baby. And I don't want to carry a baby and then go through what happened? And now what if I keep the baby years later? If someone's going to marry me, they have to marry me and take the child. And I'm terrified. I can't let anyone. I don't know what to do. And you had an abortion. Okay, it was wrong. But it's not like you were cavalier about it. It's not like you said, have sex, and if I get pregnant, just have an abortion. Others, you may have been going through health problems and fighting depression, and you're like, I can't handle another child. And maybe your husband died, and now you're left caring for kids on a very meager income. And I don't mean to say that every abortion choice is an easy choice or a cavalier choice. God forbid. Some of you have struggled with condemnation enough. What I mean to say is this, that every abortion choice is a wrong choice. And the shout your abortion culture is perverse and ugly and despicable and destructive, and part of our self-destruction as a culture, and part of our larger culture of death. And I'm going to explain what I mean to you in a moment about larger culture of death. Here's an article, New York's Abortion Problem, National Review, Katie Yoder, January 10th. New York's abortion problem. Already in New York, it boasts the highest abortion rate in the country, all right? And here's a pro-abortion protester a few years back, abortion on demand and without apology. And here are the stats. New York City, you ready? New York City performed 544 abortions for every 1,000 live births. This is before this law was passed. Oh, and by the way, the law is passed on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Talk about celebrating death. So you're talking about roughly 1 in 3 unborn babies are aborted in New York. However, Wall Street Journal reports July 10th, 2018. Are you ready for these stats? When it comes to black babies and Hispanic babies, a Pew Research survey taken last year found that 50% of Hispanics, 58% of whites, 62% of blacks now say abortion should be legal in all or most cases. And now we get to New York. New York City, thousands more black babies are aborted than born alive each year. You tell me there's no strategy behind this. You tell me there's no mindset to have these abortion clinics in inner city areas or in poor areas in black neighborhoods. You tell me there's no strategy. Oh, it's all based on compassion. It's compassionate to slaughter in the womb more babies than are being born. I look at this as part of a satanic attack to wipe out the black community. That's how I look at it. In New York City, thousands more black babies were aborted than born alive each year, and the abortion rate among black mothers is more than 3 times higher than it is for white mothers. According to the City Health Department report released in May, so 2018, between 2012 and 2016, black mothers terminated 136,420 pregnancies and gave birth to 118,127 babies. More babies killed by abortion in the black community in New York City than born alive. To me, that's a satanic attack to wipe out a people. What are we going to do with it?
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. If you had an abortion, worked in an abortion clinic, close to a family member who had an abortion, participated, and rather than shout your abortion, you want to warn others, you want to speak the truth. Many folks listen to these shows, watch these shows, hear your words. You never know who you're going to help. Today, give me a call. I'm going to go to the phones very shortly, 866-348-7884. New York, the state of New York, not only passes a radical abortion law, allowing a woman to abort her baby up until the very last day before delivery, if there are alleged health-related reasons, if there is some alleged justification. But New York City went even further. And what New York City did was lit up one World Trade Center. And there you have it, One World Trade Center, the 408-foot spire, they lit it up in pink. Listen, it should have been lit up in blood red. It should have been lit up in blood red. And rather than keep people clapping and celebrating, they should have been weeping and mourning. So consider this. Throughout the state, which has the highest abortion rates in America, for every 1,000 live births, 544 babies are aborted. That's roughly 1 in every 3. Throughout the state, consider that. When you break it down into New York City, among black mothers, and this to me is a satanic attack on the entire black community in America. Listen to this stat. Between 2012 and 2016, this was released in May 2018, black mothers terminated 136,426 pregnancies and gave birth to 118,127 babies. In 2014, 36% of all abortions were performed on black women. This is nationally, who are just 13% of the female population. This is horrific. This is ugly. This, to me, is another way of society attacking a certain group of people. And oh, no, this is being compassionate. Oh, so black mothers should be aborting their babies at a higher rate than white mothers or Asian mothers or Hispanic mothers? That's somehow compassionate for them? The lives of black babies are not as precious as the lives of white babies or Asian babies or Hispanic babies or what? The lives of black babies are less important than the lives of white babies? Is that what we're saying? Friends, it's time to wake up. It's time that we stand together in a pro-life movement to save precious lives. This is not the time to shout abortions. This is the time to weep abortions. This is a time for us as followers of Jesus to repent for our inactivity, for our hard hearts, for our lack of care and lack of compassion. Because if one-tenth of us got actively involved in the battle for life, everything would change dramatically in a matter of months and years. And that's why, to paraphrase Francis Schaeffer, he said every abortion clinic should have a sign saying, "Open by permission of the local church. Let us stand together." This is something of importance to every single person of conscience in America. Let us stand together for the lives of these unborn. Let us fight against a culture of death. Let us strive for a culture of life. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Heidi in Minnesota. Thank you for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Hello, this is Heidi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Well, I was just calling because I share my testimony a lot with a lot of girls. But I had an abortion when I was 24. I'm 57 now. And so I lived with this, with the grief and the loss. But I've found forgiveness in the Lord. And, you know, for the first few years after I had, well, for many years after I had the abortion, I had a lot of problems in my life. I had alcoholism and depression and suicide attempts. And when I had the abortion, I already had one child, and I was in prostitution. I was using drugs. The child's father was actually my pimp, and he made me get an abortion. And it, despite all of that, I regret so deeply, because now, you know, I have two grown sons, and I have four grandsons, and my grandsons are my life. And I think about the other grandchildren that I would have, and you know, in the course of my healing with the Lord, I've named my child. And I know I have a little boy named Jonathan in heaven. And I know, and God's had mercy on me to even give me a few dreams where I've seen him in my dreams. And I know what he looks like. And the first one, my oldest son was on his first deployment in Iraq. And there had been an explosion in the area he was in. And I didn't know if he was, you know, what had happened. And I was so scared. And that night is the first time I ever dreamed. And in my dream, it was Jonathan and Jesus. And they had their arms around each other. And Jonathan just looked at me and said, "Mom, it's okay. We're looking out for him." And I had such peace, and I was able to sleep that night. Mm. And the next time I saw him, I go to a Messianic congregation here in Minneapolis. And I'm a praise dancer, which is really amazing with my background. But we were dancing and worshiping the Lord, and it was just really intense. And like it was in my mind. I had a vision. It was like the hosts of heaven were on the edge of heaven looking down and smiling and rejoicing. And Jesus reached back and he pulled Jonathan forward. And Jonathan just looked at me and was like, "Mom, I forgive you." And I just fell to the ground. I was weeping. And then I got up and I shared my testimony, you know, with the congregation and the people that were there. So I've spent 27 years working in the field of, you know, I work with victims of domestic violence and trafficking. And I share with all the women that I work with, you know, it's been my testimony and a warning. Do not get an abortion. You will regret it your whole life. I'm past the shame. I'm past, you know, the devil doesn't have, isn't condemned. I will not allow him to condemn me about it because I'm forgiven.
Yeah.
But there's a grief there because there's a loss of what could have been.
Yeah,
what grandchildren would I have?
Yeah, you could know you're forgiven and still have grief over something. Heidi, let me ask you this. So obviously your life was messed up before you knew the Lord. But are you saying that after the abortion, you then began to struggle with other things, depression, alcoholism? Were those things there first and then you had the abortion, or that they became worse after that?
I believe I had drugs and alcohol were part of my life before that. And of course, you know, being in prostitution, there was so much violence. There was all kinds of bad stuff. I had a lot of trauma. But the depression, actually, as a child growing up and you know, up until that point, I had never had any mental health problems. And after I had that abortion and then the fought, you know, some more stuff through the years, then the rest, like, until recently, actually, I have had such a major struggle with depression and many suicide attempts and, you know, getting on medication. I'm not on medication now, but, you know, it was just one more thing.
Right.
And until I actually repented of my sin of killing my child, I mean, I had to take responsibility and I had to name it and say, "I killed my child. Oh, Lord, forgive me." And until I did that, it was something that I didn't even realize that was happening inside of me. It was like I hadn't even verbalized the grief. It was just one more thing. Oh, well, it's an abortion. It's a fee. Like it was no big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, and that, and I just went along with that whole mindset. And this is back in the 80s. So it wasn't as accepted then as it is now. I work in the nonprofit world. I actually have these young women at my job who laugh about abortion and are celebrating this whole Shout Out Your Abortion campaign. And I am horrified.
Yeah, you know, Heidi, it obviously takes a certain level of hardness of heart to get there. There's the hardness of heart of the larger culture. There's the hardness of heart experienced by individuals. There's the culture of death, part of the larger hardness in which we live. Look, it's not just abortion that's great, fine, celebrate it, shout it. And I understand some of these women are trying to push back against the stigma and say, "Hey, no one's going to make me feel ashamed or embarrassed." But there's the larger celebration of death in our culture. I mean, come on, we're entertained by walking zombies who have their brains blown out. We're entertained by vampires. They're the heroes. And the endless shows featuring murder and violence. It's just part of our larger culture. And with that, a lot of hardness. And yet, I'm sure, Heidi, that a lot of these young women who are laughing and talking about shouting their abortion, many of them have experienced pain as well. And this is their way of trying to drown it out. This is their way of trying to deny it. But the Holy Spirit's probably dealing with many of them along the way. And what you have, Heidi, is a message of life and forgiveness. We're not talking about live condemned the rest of your life. We're talking about find forgiveness through the cross. Take responsibility. Heidi's case, she was forced to do it, but still felt she was complicit, took responsibility, and receive forgiveness. And then, whether you just pray for others or become public with your testimony like Heidi, you can bring life and hope. Not the end of the story. There's redemption still. Hey, thank you so much for calling. Much more to come. We're just getting started.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I have a book coming out later this year. I don't want to talk more about it now, otherwise that's all I'll talk about. I think it's going to be the hardest-hitting, most eye-opening book, perhaps the most intense I've ever written. It's written, it's done, and is now in the early editing process. But I do talk in the book about the connection between the ancient baby-killing idolatry, where babies would be literally sacrificed to idols. Talk about that and compare it to the abortion culture today. That's not the whole focus of the book. That's a chapter or two in the book. But I came across a book by a Catholic priest, a pro-life priest, Thomas Utenauer. Not sure if I pronounced his name correctly. The book, Demonic Abortion. And he says this: the modern abortion industry offers ritual blood sacrifice to the ancient abortion demon. It is in every way a demonic religion. It has its sacred dogma, choice, its ruling hierarchy, Planned Parenthood, its theologians, feminist ideologues, its sacrificing priesthood, abortionists, its temples, abortion mills, altars, surgical tables, ritual victims, primarily babies, secondarily women, acolytes and sacrosanctions, clinic workers and death escorts, congregations, all supporters of abortion, and its own unifying principle of sacramental grace, money. In short, the abortion industry is a perfect demonic system which offers a perverse form of worship to the devil. You say, oh man, that's extreme. But if that is a child in the womb, a child that baby that sucks its thumb, can recognize its mother's voice, that can feel pain and the like, hey, I don't think what's being said there is too extreme. Rachel Cox wrote this on a pro-life website. Let's pretend a fetus is a non-human animal. Now that it's settled, allow me to use an example to demonstrate why killing a non-human animal in a similar fashion as when used in a human abortion is still deplorable. Let's say I have a puppy, but I can't afford one at this stage of my life. Lack of money is a common reason for wanting to abort. What do I do with this puppy? Since it's still small, I'm going to cram it in a blender while conscious and liquefy it to a bloody soup, disposing of the concoction in the trash. That might work for a small puppy, but what about an older dog? It won't fit in the blender. How about this then? Without using anesthesia, I'm going to chop each of the dog's legs off one by one with a pair of bolt cutters, but the dog is still alive at this point, so the job isn't over yet. Now I'm going to pick up a giant rock, slam it down on the dog's head to crush it, and then throw the dog's mangled body into a biohazard bag. Do you think the methods of getting rid of the dog were disturbing? Who wouldn't? Then she explains those two methods are basically the same, used to kill thousands of fetuses every day. Sound familiar, she asked. The first procedure I described was very similar to an aspiration abortion, commonly performed in the first trimester of pregnancy. The second method I described was akin to a dilation evacuation abortion used in the second trimester. She says there are other methods of abortion besides these. None of them can be described as nonviolent, and they all result in death, more than 60 million deaths since 1973. And in Ohio, overcoming a veto from Governor John Kasich, the legislature passes the fetal heartbeat bill, where when the woman hears the heartbeat of that baby, that she can't have an abortion. When a heartbeat is detected, can't have an abortion. A federal judge overturned that. Now, obviously, it's going to be fought in courts after that, but let me be really blunt here. 866-34-TRUTH. If it was Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton again today, or Donald Trump versus a radical pro-abortion Democrat candidate, I would vote for Donald Trump again today, despite his shortcomings, his flaws, despite the things he does that bother me and some that grieve me. I would vote for him today without hesitation if it was him against a radical abortion candidate. And it looks like the way the Democrat Party is going, it is going more and more to the left, more and more extreme. I don't just mean with espousing socialism and things like that, but even more radically pro-abortion than it's ever been. I would do it in a heartbeat. Look, President Trump has just renominated 50 justices, including two potentially to the ultra-liberal Ninth Circuit Court in San Francisco. And justices, virtually all of them, come out as strong pro-life justices. I have no interest in just new judges. I have interest in constitutional judges and pro-life judges and judges that esteem marriage and family and values on which our country was founded. That's what I want to see. And I would take all the other junk and flack and say, yeah, I don't agree with the president here. I wish he didn't do that. It grieves me when he calls this one a dog. And, yeah, don't agree with some of the decisions he's making and how he's making them. But in terms of why I voted for him, I'm glad he's doing these things. And if it came to Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump versus another pro-abortion candidate, I'd vote for him in a heartbeat. And I do believe with the justices being appointed that it will help turn the tide in some legislation, at least in our current culture of death. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me go back to the phones in Georgia. All right, we don't have caller there wanted to share a horrible abortion experience. All right, we'll go back to the phones momentarily. Look, this is the great moral challenge that we face as human beings in our generation. Oh, in terms of the spiritual moral assault, LGBT activism, and trying to redefine marriage, family, and the outgrowth of the sexual revolution and the attack on gender distinctions. This is massive. This is the great thing that the church has to face up to and sort out and work through. But in terms of an obvious moral problem that virtually every committed believer that I know agrees is wrong, even some who've said, look, I'm pro-life. I don't like the candidacies of Hillary Clinton, policies of Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, but I voted for them because I don't think that abortion is going to change because of the president. I think it's going to change because of the culture, and I like them for other reasons. Okay, I differ with that. In my own heart, I could not possibly do that. This, to me, is an ultimate one issue, a one issue focus to me, so that if I knew someone was aggressively pro-abortion, under no circumstances could I vote for them. And if there was another candidate that I liked and that was totally wishy-washy on abortion, then I might just have to sit that election out. And I'm not saying that there are other candidates that wouldn't be better candidates than President Trump. Right now, he was the choice in 2018, and he could, 2016, he could be the choice again in 2020. But to me, we have to start here. We have to, if a candidate is pro-abortion, I can't vote for them. I don't care how much good they're going to do in this way, this way, this way, this way. And in my view, there are other times in history when we should be and should have been one-issue people. And say during the days of the slave trade, this guy's going to be great on the economy. This guy's going to be great in all these different ways, but he's pro-slavery. How can I give him my vote? You say, well, there's no alternative. All the candidates are pro-slavery. Then we need to raise up another party and fight against it. You get to that breaking point. And many were at that point already with the Republicans saying enough is enough. You promise us everything and don't do anything. And yet, to me, we already have a third party, which is believers, committed born-again believers. We should not ultimately identify in terms of our who we are as Republicans and Democrats. I'm not saying you can't be part of a party, but our ultimate identity is not Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, but child of God. And that holds us to a higher morality, because of which we're sometimes going to be the opposition of a Republican leader or a Democrat leader. We're sometimes going to be the ones speaking truth to power. But we should have a holy independence. Look, if you don't have my book yet, Donald Trump is Not My Savior, can I really encourage you to get it? If I could push a button and you could get all the information into your heart and mind, I'd just push that button, but that's not the case. I urge you, get a copy of the book. And when you get to the end of the book and I give seven principles for moving forward, you'll understand a lot more what I'm saying. Donald Trump is Not My Savior. If you don't have it, get a copy today. 866-34-TRUTH. It'll shed further light on this. It'll give you more insight. All right, let us go to the phones. Barbara in Hawaii, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
You're welcome.
You know that I'm an African-American female. that I'm 71 years old.
Oh, okay. I remember you, Barbara. I remember you. Yep, go ahead.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you. I appreciate that very much. What do you tell a 12-year-old who is now who has been abused by a neighbor? So the 12-year-old is now pregnant. The 12-year-old doesn't know anything about being a woman. Mm-hmm. Or the 12-year-old. So what does the 12-year-old do? The 12-year-old does what the mama and daddy tells the 12-year-old to do. So the 12-year-old still has to live with the fact that she had an abortion because her mother made her have an abortion. The pain doesn't go away.
No.
The pain is always there. But I tell you something, Doc. My God is an awesome God because he has been with me. He has talked with me about it because no one else has. So what do you tell a 12-year-old, Doc?
Mm.
What does a 12-year-old do? How do they live with that pain except to take it to Jesus?
Yeah, and Barbara, not just that, just to jump in, but how do they feel their first sexual experience was being raped by someone else? And they may not have even had, you know, they could have even been, you know, prepubescent. So everything is just out of order and out of line. And then often a child feels they did something wrong, even though someone else abused them, they did something wrong. So you've got them being a victim there, then the victim of having an abortion, and later in life that, you know, they wonder and think about it. And yes, Barbara, I know some people survive, but a lot of people survive with terrible scars, and terrible wounds, and all kinds of agony. And I don't know how we can really make it without divine intervention.
There's no way. I would not have been able to make it had it not been for Jesus.
So, Barbara, that's your story you just told, as we realized as you were speaking. That's Barbara's story. But 71 years old, right? 59 years later, the pain is still there, but she's found new life and hope in Jesus. Thank you, Barbara. Thank you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, tonight, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, The Real Messiah broadcast. I'm going to get into some fascinating Jewish objections to Jesus, and even questions: if we don't use the traditional Hebrew vowels, how can we know what text to read? And this should undermine our entire faith, and etc. So really interesting objections that have been sent our way. I plan to address. So you can watch that on our Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown, or our YouTube page, Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown. If you're not a subscriber to our YouTube videos, what are you waiting for? I mean, we got like 575,000 folks following us on Facebook, but only about 55,000 YouTube subscribers. We're newer there, but join us. This way, the moment a video is posted, you'll know. And when we're live with our Line of Fire or Real Messiah, boom, you'll know. And then over 1,500 videos right there for you. So subscribe. Tell your friends. You got to subscribe to the Ask Dr. Brown YouTube channel. All right? So let me point out something really interesting. A fascinating admission on The View, where the hosts there are among the most liberal on TV and the most openly Trump-hating. So with the further news about the boys from the Catholic high school who allegedly were harassing a Native American elder and then everyone throwing them under the bus from the right and the left and condemning their vile behavior, and they're wearing Make America Great hats, and they're at a pro-life march. So that means if you voted for Trump, you're directly responsible for their behavior. It's, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that was coming my way and coming the way of others. So it turns out as more footage was released that they were being harassed in really foul, ugly terms by the Black Hebrew Israelite cult, very typical of who they would be. And then there were others from the Native American group that were more harassing. So the whole picture changed. There was a lot more to it. All right. So Whoopi Goldberg asked the question, okay, well, why do we fall for this? So here's her question.
So many people admitted they made snap judgments before these other facts came in. But is it that we just instantly say that's what it is based on what we see in that moment and then have to walk stuff back when it turns out we're wrong? Why is that? Why is do we keep making the same mistake?
Because we're desperate to get Trump out of office. That's why.
Yeah, so an admission there. Now, listen, I wrote an article a few days ago saying how different are we than North Korea? North Korea, the people there don't have internet access. The people there are just told what the state media says. So for all they know, they just defeated the United States in battle. For all they know, they are the richest nation in the world. For all they know, everybody else doesn't have a quarter of what they have. I mean, there is a control by the media. It's the 1980, if you read the book 1984, that's what it is being lived out there, the Orwell classic. But I said, how different are we than North Korea? Okay, we have an abundance of media. We have an abundance of news. We have an abundance of social media. We have endless access to the internet, but we are so quickly manipulated. I don't care if it's on the right or on the left. I don't care if it's conservative, liberal. Someone's supposed to jump all over it, and we draw conclusions before knowing, oh, look, there's a video that proves it. Maybe there's more to the story. Here, what if you come into your neighbor's house and your neighbor, say the man who lives there, he's got a whole family, wife and kids, he's holding a guy on the ground and punching him in the face, and this guy's not even fighting back anymore. He's almost unconscious. Well, that's wrong. There's no possible explanation. That's wrong. But oh, what you didn't know was the man caught this guy after he broke into the house. The guy had killed his wife, killed two of his children, was on his way to kill the third when the guy pulled him to the ground, knocked the gun out of his hand, and was beating him until he was unconscious and the cops came. Now that changes the whole picture. We often just jump and whatever news media we follow. That's why I do my best. Yeah, I'm conservative and everything here is Bible-based, but I do my best to give another side to the story or to have the full picture so that you don't just jump to conclusions. But whatever outlet we listen to, it's just that's kind of gospel to us, and the other side is all evil and our side is all good. That's not truth. It's not truth. Speaking of truth, 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. Let's go to Daniel in Texas. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Hey, I wanted to say thank you so much for your radio show. I love it.
Thank you.
I guess I was just going to ask about kind of what you said earlier about how we're a third party. And I'm 100% agree with you. And it's been troubling me to see how kind of like the red team or the blue team are claiming my demographic. And if I'm not, I guess I went to a church for a while that I was told that if I didn't vote for Donald Trump, then I was going to hell. And
Hang on. I want to hear this, okay, Daniel?
Yeah.
So I have heard of churches. People have called in and talked to me about it. Sometimes seen video footage where a major church leader called on the congregation to pray for the election of Al Gore, or to pray for the election of Barack Obama. And they actually said, God, get him in office. They prayed that prayer. Whereas I just pray, God, your will, your I vote accordingly, but then I pray, God, your will, your best, your plan, right?
Yes.
But you're telling me, I'm not, I'm not questioning you. I just want to flesh this out to hear. So you don't give, I don't need to know the name of the church, but was it part of a denomination, independent? How would you describe it?
I guess you could say they have a lot of links with like Kenneth Copeland or like the Word of Faith kind of movement.
Okay, so Word of Faith. All right, they tend not to
be. Yes, sir.
Yeah, all right, so that's supposed to be all positive and stuff. Okay, so primarily Word of Faith. Ethnically, was it mainly white? Was it mixed? How would you describe it?
It was mixed.
Okay, it was mixed ethnically. And so it was part of a mixed community?
Yes.
No, okay, got it. All right, and are you paraphrasing what the pastor said or interpreting what the pastor said or quoting almost exactly what the pastor said?
What the exact words were, if you don't vote for Trump, you're voting for Hillary. Even if you don't vote at all,
right,
you're casting the vote for abortion. And there was, to say one quote, there was a quote where a man, one of the pastors, was calling for a Samson to be raised up because Samson was anointed to kill, and he just wished he could go there and he could just blow away all of the Democrats and the sellout rhinos. And that's the mentality that I've seen really growing in this church. Understand, if I were to tell you what it was, you would know what it was. And it has been a massive, massive influence in my area, and mm-hmm. a very spirit-filled, amazing church that I loved being a part of. Very evangelical, very outreach-based. But
all right, how would you have felt if the pastor got up and said, "Listen, we don't, in principle, endorse a candidate or a party, but we want to lay out the basis on which we vote. Now, for us, abortion is a big, big, big issue. Obviously, we don't have a perfect candidate. We don't have an ideal candidate. We don't have someone that's like a champion, born-again believer. So we're dealing with fallen, flawed people. That's always going to be the case. But in this case, more obvious than others, right? So, for example, Donald Trump, for many, was our last choice as evangelicals. Just seemed to be the worst possible candidate because of his past and his behavior and stuff. And we had to really weigh who we voted for. But what if they said, okay, let's look at the key values and abortion. Now, let's look at abortion. Let's look at what the Bible says. Let's look at the culture of life, et cetera. And then let's just look at, here's the party platform, Republican, Democrat. Here's what Trump says, what Hillary said. Now let's look at marriage. Let's look at meaning of family. Let's look at, you know, whatever, 3, 4, 5 key issues. And said, I think you'll see these are really weighty issues. And we really urge you to prayerfully get involved and vote. It's a privilege you have as a citizen. And these are really weighty issues to consider and issues of life and death. So take this to the Lord. Would you have felt that that was okay?
I think that's an appropriate biblical response.
Got it. Okay. Because obviously that's what I would advocate, is doing that and then really educating the people on the issues to have a heart to make a difference. But look, Daniel, here's the problem, and unfortunately we're out of time, but I'm so glad we were able to get your call in, that we are not just divided over issues now, and that's going to happen. There's light versus darkness. There's the spirit of the world and the spirit of God's people. That's natural that that's going to happen. The problem is that we're now totally divided also over the personality of Donald Trump. And we're totally divided over political rhetoric. And do you wear the Make America Great hat or not? Or as opposed to, look, let's divide over abortion. Let's divide over the meaning of marriage. Let's divide over standing with Israel. Let's divide over those kinds of issues. Fine. Let's draw a line in the sand and say, this is where we stand. We'll be a good neighbor. We'll love you. We want to reach you with the gospel. But no compromise here. Let's not fight over personalities and politics, which must be subservient. Anyway, so much more to say. Thanks for calling, Daniel. Back with you tonight and tomorrow.